This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Aftershock Central Podcast. It's just me, Ronnie, tonight. Martin got called away, or maybe he's revising time, like he likes to say, or being written into another Aftershock book. I don't know. He has a big ego. But tonight, I have a special guest with me, which would be Zach Thompson.
Hello.
And as per announcement this late last week, you are going to be doing an upcoming book that's coming out called Relay.
That's correct, yeah.
And all the stuff that we've read about it, it seems like, well, like, up Martin and I's alley.
And you awesome.
And you had it right, like, the at Peter K. Dick, right?
Yeah. So it's a big homage to Philip K. Dick's work.
Okay. People might know you from The Dregs, right?
That's correct, yeah. The Dregs is a weird homeless detective story that I did at Black Mask Studios last year.
Yes.
Well, I guess it's, yeah, the early part of 2017.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's only 4 issues, so if you haven't read it, go read it, because it's awesome.
Thanks, man.
And Lonnie's with you on that as well, right?
Yeah, Lonnie and I co-wrote that book together.
Right, which is... because now you two are both jumping on to Cable also, right, for Marvel?
Yeah, that just got announced yesterday, but we've been working on Cable with Marvel for about a month now, and so we're taking over writing duties in March.
Right, and then you have another Black Mask book coming out with him as well, right?
Yeah, that one's called Come Into Me, and it's like a weird David Cronenberg like body horror book.
Awesome.
Because yeah.
I seen some stuff that you tweeted out, and, you know, it looks pretty, like, said right up our alley type stuff.
Oh, so. Man, we're so lucky. We have Peter Kowalski on that book from Sex.
Uh-huh.
And he's just killing the page. Like, I can't wait to share the first issue of that book with people.
Yeah, from what we were able to see right now, and I mean, like, the general public, it looks amazing.
Thanks.
So you guys are like the dynamic duo, it seems like, here lately.
Yeah, Lonnie and I went to film school together a couple of years back, and The Dregs was actually my final screenplay that I wrote when I was in film school for writing, and had some trouble getting traction on a homeless detective film, which right. shouldn't come as a surprise, really. And so him and I were talking about doing comics together, and we kind of just decided to adapt that screenplay into something. But the funny thing is like we wrote Come Into Me before we wrote The Dregs, and we pitched it around to all kinds of different publishers, and everyone told us it was too weird. And so after we've gained kind of credibility with The Dregs, we've been able to get Come Into Me off the ground. But that was the one that we came up with first.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I read it, and it's awesome. So, like I said, if you guys listening haven't read it, please go check it out. Even though it's not an Aftershock book, I know, but so for like I checked you out a little bit, and one of your bios said that you did fan fiction.
Yeah,
for Doctor Who.
Yeah, way back when, this would have been almost like 10 years ago now, I was writing like my thesis in university, and I was spending my time writing Doctor Who fan fiction instead of actually turning in my paper. So, and then that led to going to film school, because I was like, you know what, if I'm writing fan fiction, I should probably, you know, just, most of comics is fan fiction, so why not just turn it into a job?
Right.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you're a big Who fan?
Yeah, well, I loved Doctor Who in the like David Tennant, Matt Smith eras, and I kind of fell off the wagon with Peter Capaldi.
Okay.
Like, not knocking it by any means. It's just like I've in the last couple of years, I've gotten so busy that I've had to trim shows from my diet like crazy. And Doctor Who was one of them that had to go.
Oh yeah, yeah. Trust me, I understand that whole trimming of shows type thing. So, Relay. Like last week, I had the pleasure of having a conversation with Donnie Cates as well.
Awesome.
And you want to let everybody know like what you can't just by an interview that you read on a website?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, Donnie and I's relationship goes back a little ways. I used to review comic books and do like the press side of things probably 6 years ago. And so back when Donnie started writing Buzzkill at Dark Horse, I reviewed his books for him and I did interviews with him, and we started to develop a relationship then. And he wasn't getting press from anyone, and I just thought his work was really good, and I had kind of really just stumbled upon it. And so I was publishing reviews and trying to like give Donnie press wherever I could. And so after The Dregs came out, I sent it to him and I was like, hey man, like, you know, I'm finally getting into this myself, because the goal of me being in press was always to kind of make the jump into writing my own fiction. And it seemed like it was a good way to get into the community and meet a lot of people. And so he read The Dregs, and this was Emerald City Comic Con this year. And I ran into him just outside the Aftershock booth, and he called me over and we had a good chat, and he introduced me to all of Aftershock. And he literally put The Dregs in Aftershock's hands and said, you guys need to read this. This is one of the best comics that came out this year. And I was just kind of floored by that reaction. And so cut to like about a month later, my phone rings at like, I'm going to say like 3 o'clock in the morning. And okay. I just get a text from a random number that says, are you up? And I'm like, yeah. And then my phone rings and it's Donnie. And Donnie's like, hey man, things are going a little bit crazy for me right now. And like, this is pre Marvel announcement, I think.
Right.
And he was just basically alluding to the fact that like, he had a lot of things going on that, were requiring him to step off of a book at Aftershock. And he was wondering if I would be interested in taking it over. So we had a brief chat at like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night, in April. About Relay, and then we both realized that we like loved The Expanse and had a lot of similar influences. So he sent me over the outline that he originally wrote for Aftershock and said, like, this is the basic idea of the series. If you like it, I'll put you in touch with Aftershock and we'll see what we can work out. And so I read it, I dug it. There were some things in it that I like. Donnie is an incredible storyteller, and you know, I respect his work so much, but he tells stories a little bit differently than I do. And so when he gave me the outline, there was a couple of things that I was like, okay, I want to kind of make this my own. I want to give it my own flavor. And so I rewrote the outline from the ground up, keeping the basic beats that he had there, but kind of making them work in my own sort of voice.
Right, right.
And I sent that off to Aftershock, and they really dug it. And so from then on, from like about April on, I've been on the book. And so at this point, most of my work, I've written the first three issues of the series already, and number one is already all done.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, man, I was completely floored. I was like, okay, like this whole year for me has kind of been like The Dregs was so well received, and there's been so many opportunities that have been coming out of it that I kind of just am like, all right, I think I'm in a coma, but I gotta.
It's pedal to the metal, right?
In a coma.
I said pedal to the metal. It's time to go, go, go. Now,
oh yeah, like. Yeah. Like I've been, yeah. There's and like, yeah. It's been wild, and I have a couple other projects that haven't been announced yet that I'm working on. So it's been.
We will tail around to that because I have a theory about one that I don't know about, but you know, we'll talk about that later.
Okay, cool.
Donnie and I talked about how, like when Aftershock first started, say,
Yeah.
We had top tier writers and artists on books. And then we had like the second wave, kind of like the Marvel movies, if you will.
Yeah.
But like you're like the first, I don't want to say top tier, but you're like one of the first breakout writers to actually take over a book, a new book, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And for me as a fan, that's exciting. And so I can only imagine, even though you have to work with Joe sometimes, you know, but like, I'm sure that's pretty exciting for you, right?
It's interesting, right? Because I think like, so I have a lot of friends who are like in the industry, and I think for a little while, Aftershock had this kind of reputation for being like four top level players who were like, you know, already writing for Marvel or DC and kind of just wanted to do a creator own book at another place. Mm-hmm. And now, bringing someone like myself in, I think they're trying very hard to be more inclusive with new writers and new voices. And you can definitely feel that. And like Mike is my editor on Relay. He's the editor in chief of the company.
Right,
and he's
right.
been incredible. Like in terms of, cause I come from the creator own world where like at Black Mask, you do everything on your own. There's no editor. There's no nothing. You just basically have to get your book ready for print and you have to figure it all out on your own. So to have the support of Aftershock in making Relay every step of the way has been a really different experience, and it's been amazing. I feel really lucky to be part of the Aftershock family.
With the exception of Joe. I know you can't say it, but, you know, I will. No, Joe's great. So paint us the Relay picture of what you can without, you know, give us some juice, I guess, of what it's about or, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, Relay is in a lot of ways my love letter to like movies like Paul Verhoeven's Total Recall.
Oh, yeah.
And RoboCop and The Fifth Element and stuff like that. Like, I grew up watching late 80s sci-fi and early 90s sci-fi. And while I love a lot of the sci-fi comics that are getting released today, there's something special about that, like, kind of balls-to-the-wall, old-school sci-fi stuff that has, like, really heady concepts, but also features a lot of action.
Yes.
And has a lot of fun with it. And I don't see a lot of that in current sci-fi comics. Bring that sort of energy to it. And so Relay is basically like takes the premise of what if the Borg was humanity, the Borg from Star Trek.
Right.
So it's like we're all part of a monoculture where we have this monolith on planet Earth that tells us what things we can and can't do, what art we can and cannot consume. It gives us treatments for all kinds of diseases and ailments. And it basically defines every aspect of life as we know it. And we're following Jad Carter, who's like an employee of the Relay. He's basically a peacekeeper. He has to, you know, walk the streets of futuristic Los Angeles and make sure that people are abiding by the edicts of the Relay. The Relay gives out orders every hour on the hour, and it tells people how to live. But as you start to see in the first issue, not everyone agrees with it, and not everyone really thinks that it's communicating the truth. And as Jad's journey begins, he starts to realize that everything the monolith says it is isn't really the case. He gets kind of thrown away on this journey looking for the creator of the Relay. And it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of twists and turns in like every single issue. Like, we've kind of made it so at the end of every issue we blow up the narrative and we're like, hey, you know what you think was happening?
Mm-hmm.
No, we're going to go in a different direction now. And so, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so like every issue is like a end of a TV show where it kind of leaves you with a cliffhanger?
Yeah, we've kind of built in these huge holy fuck moments. We're awesome. Just like, oh, yeah. Man. Like,
yeah.
And so the end of issue one is a holy fuck moment. Number two is a holy fuck. Number three is a holy fuck. And number four is a holy fuck, and number five is a holy fuck. And so, like, and it's going to be very interesting to see how people receive the end of 5, because it's the end of the first arc, and it's just like, it's such a, the image that we're going to leave readers on is going to just blow their minds, I think, so hard. And it's because I know I've developed about 3 arcs for the series. So my hope is that we get to do 15 issues.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then there's a lot of seeding already done for future storylines in issue 1. And I've filled it with all kinds of just Easter eggs and little nods to things. So like I have a tendency to write really detailed scripts, and people tell me all the time, oh, that's going to stop. You're going to run out of energy and you won't be able to do it. I was at New York Comic Con and Donnie leaned into my ear and he was like, I read your script for Relay Number 1. It's really long. Try and fucking keep that up, buddy. And I just laughed and I was like, I will. But like, so a normal 20-page issue for me, usually the script comes in at like 40 to 45 pages.
Wow, yeah.
And I was really worried about that because like when you're in creator-owned, you can control all that stuff. And I had Andy Clark, who's on the book, who is doing the art, is, you know, I fucking love Andy. Andy's work is incredible. And I was super worried about me being this like new writer saying like, oh, you know, you got to put in all this detail, you got to put in this and that and all this stuff. And, you know, as you can see in the pages that have already come out, he did, like, he nailed it.
Right.
He's added so much density to every single page that this book is loaded with information. And what I love about it is the background tells a story just as much as the foreground does. So you can watch the characters or you can look at the world around them and you can see hints of things that are going to come.
So you kind of already said it, kind of, but like, is it 15 issues or could it just possibly go on from there?
It could go on from there. The reality right now is that we're pretty far out from July, and as with every comic, it just depends on whether or not people are into it. Oh, so
okay.
I'm pushing for at least 15 because I think I have ideas for the remaining 2 arcs that I want to do.
Okay.
And if it goes into ongoing, that's even better. The world is big enough that we could definitely keep doing this for a while.
And pull on some threads that's been laid out from
that. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, say, worst case scenario, it doesn't. Is there, I mean, like you said, you write so massively into it. Is there a good turnoff point? So it doesn't like end abruptly and ends cohesively.
Every arc will end on, there will be resolution at the end of an arc, but there will always be threads that are laid out. I don't like clean endings to things. Like I like kind of leaving. My favorite types of endings are the ones that are a little bit more left in the hands of the reader. So you have a bunch of information, you went on this journey with the protagonist, and then you kind of are left to decide what you think happens.
Right.
Whether or not that's lingering in a moment between two characters or just showing you something and going like, you know, think about this image for a little while. And so every arc will always end in a nice clean fashion, but it will leave you with things to think about. And there'll be enough threads there that if we were to ever continue it, we could go on for a while. My goal is to always leave readers wanting more.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds amazing. So I'm hoping that it just keeps on going and
we
get to pull as many threads as we need to. What's one artist that you haven't worked with either on already projects or up and coming unannounced projects that would be your top draft pick?
Oh man, I am currently obsessed with Christian Ward's work.
Okay.
He is currently on Black Bolt at Marvel.
Yes.
And his stuff it looks like he colors his stuff as well as draws it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got this like really gorgeous neon soaked pastel style that no one else in comics can really even, like, you open that book and you know it's him. And so I would kill to work with him. And Phil Hester is another one that I just think is like he's just a god.
Yeah.
I would give anything to do a project with him.
Yeah,
and like
think, oh, Ship, Go ahead.
Okay. Shipwreck is amazing.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's a great guy, too. Really great
I've never met him. I've never even talked to him. I've just been in awe of his work for so long.
Are you going to be able to hit any cons this year, like C2E2 or anything like that?
I think so. So, like, this is, like, last year, because I only had one book, I didn't really do a whole lot of the con racket. But this year, I think I'm doing Emerald City and C2E2, and I believe San Diego and New York would be my four cons this year.
Awesome. C2E2 is the winning answer. That's when everybody on this podcast network gets together and we all meet at C2E2.
Oh, amazing.
So... and then I harassed Joe a couple times at other cons, and so does Martin, but, you know, we always harass the Aftershock booth most of the days, and...
Nice.
besides Relay, what other Aftershock book, well, I guess I don't know if I can ask that, because do you read other comics? I'm sure you're a fan of comics. I didn't mean it like that, but like, are you up to date, or do you trade weight type thing, or?
So I go to the comic book store every Wednesday, and I try to pick up something from any one of the publishers I'm working with, just to kind of like keep, because I mean, like, you want people to support your work, so I feel like it's important to support other people's work. And so I try to read as much as I can and keep up on things. Like at Aftershock, like, I'm a huge fan of Insects. I think that book is amazing. Uh-huh. I'm sad to see it end.
Uh-huh.
I love Shipwreck. Like, I am dying for that last issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really think Unholy Grail is really good, too, and Dark Ark is really fantastic.
Yeah.
I love both of those books. Mm-hmm. What else? I've been reading Donnie's Doctor Strange, which I think is... fantastic.
Yes.
And Matt Rosenberg's Punisher run with him in the War Machine armor is just like too good. What else am I reading? I read literally everything Black Mask puts out, just because, like, that's such a small publisher, and they've been like, I wouldn't be anywhere without Black Mask, so I just kind of try to support everyone
right
there, because it feels like a tiny family. So I'm sure there's all kinds of... I try to read older stuff, too, like revisit a lot of Alan Moore's stuff and, you know, go through a lot of old Grant Morrison stuff. Like, I think those two guys really are the pinnacle of comic book writing for me, so I try to consume their stuff on the regular. So I try to reread Watchmen at least once a year. Can never have enough Alan Moore in your life.
that's true. So did you read comics growing up?
Yeah. Like, funnily enough, like, I grew up reading 90s X-Men. I grew up reading Age of Apocalypse and all kinds of stuff.
Executioner Song.
So, like, yeah. And
Executioner
so, like,
Song's, like, my favorite X event. I don't know why, but, like, I'm a 90s kid, too, so.
But, yeah, so I – and, like, New Mutants. And so, like, this whole writing Cable is – like, literally a dream come true. So I'm kind of like in this place where I'm like, I don't know what's going on anymore, but it's cool. It just feels like I'm playing. I have like Cable action figures in my office at home. And so just like, I feel like I'm a kid playing with those action figures again.
Yeah. That's when does that issue come out?
Cable 155, which will be my first issue, is in March.
Okay. Okay. So we still got a little bit, though.
Yeah, a couple months before then.
Yeah, yeah. Black Mask, when is the new one of that coming out next year, too? Early next year, too?
Yeah, so Come Into Me comes out in February.
February, okay.
Yeah, and that'll be the end of February. So trying to get it out before Emerald City, just because Emerald City is such a great show. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we have issue one there and we can hand it out to people and stuff. Because I haven't had new work come out since June of this year, so I'm kind of really eager to get a new issue out, and we've been working on Come Into Me for about 3 years, so it's like, it's time.
I'm totally excited about Relay for you, like, for you being on it And then, actually, the idea of it. I love, like, world building type stuff. And like you said, it sounds so much like an 80s, 90s type movie, sci-fi movie.
That's what we're trying. Yeah.
So, what would be your favorite 80s, 90s sci-fi movie?
It's 100% Total Recall. Like, I am obsessed with Total Recall to, like, no end. Like, I think it's the right mix of, like, action and gore, and it's pretty heady, too. Like, that ending is, like, not, you know, it's that perfect ending that I was talking about where it's just, like, it leaves you on a question. You're like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
And, like, that whole movie, too, was, like, I'm obsessed with David Cronenberg. And, like, Cronenberg was originally going to direct that before Verhoeven came on. So, like, I actually got my hands on Cronenberg's original script for Total Recall.
Oh, nice.
He wrote a draft of it way back when. And I took a lot of that stuff that was in there and put it into Relay. So there's weird things that are coming that are part of David Cronenberg's vision for, like, a Philip K. Dick world.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, like, Arnold was on, like, a whirlwind then because, like, you know, it was Predator and Running Man. And
I love Running Man, too.
Oh, Running Man is
fucking amazing.
Yeah, I would say Running Man's probably my favorite Arnold movie.
Yeah, man.
I don't know if I can call it, like, sci-fi or not, but, you know, I love...
Yeah. Got such a good soundtrack, too.
Yeah, it's got soundtrack. It's got one-liners, you know.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah. And then you got, what's his name? Dawson.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, every one liner in there is just, you know, it's crazy.
That's so good.
So I usually ask anybody that I have conversations or interviews with this hard hitting question. Favorite musician or band of all time?
I would say Daft Punk.
Really?
Yeah. I saw Daft Punk in 2006 live, and it was, like, one of my first concerts ever, and it, like, completely changed my perspective on music. Like, I grew up listening to a lot of, like, Chemical Brothers and a lot of Mega Man soundtracks. I used to download the Mega Man soundtracks and put them on my iPod. And so that was, like, seeing them live and seeing them perform electronic music, I was like, oh, shit, this is a religious experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to keep you very much longer. When does Relay come out?
Relay is going to come out in July. I don't think we have a full date yet because I think what will happen is the Free Comic Book Day will get announced. And then the date will be determined after that. I would expect it to be probably early July, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So next year, like month after month, is going to be like crazy busy for you then.
I've got a new book coming out February, March, April, May, and then July. So yeah. It's going to be a wild year.
You're going to be a damn rock star before you know it.
Or I'll just be like, I'll get rid of all my creative energy in 1 year, and then in 2019 I'll be like, please hire me.
If people want to follow you, which they should, where should they go?
They can go on Twitter. That's mostly where you'll find me spouting off stupid shit. And I'm at Zach B. E. Thompson. ZACBETHOMPSON.
So that was my conversation with Zach Thompson, and now I have the Aftershock Central debut of Travis Williams. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up?
You're going to be our third rotating man, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's me, dude.
And it's cool to have, like, a rotating couch, you know what I mean? So that way episodes get out smoother and on time, you know? Got to have timely stuff for awesome books, right?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, dude. And, you know, as long as it's a comfy couch.
Yeah. Well, Nick and Martin have the comfy couch on Nerdy Legion, so ours is more like a sectional, I would say. So you can just with recliners, so you can recline back, and it has the holsters for your beer.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, people in, people out.
So, you are an Aftershock fan, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So how did you become an Aftershock fan?
I was thinking about that, and I think, you know, the best answer is I started hearing about it. Well, I'm a you know, VCP fan,
right?
Central Podcasts.
Right.
And I think that was probably the first time I heard of them. And, you know, Martin's obviously a big fan. They were getting a lot of name drops, you know, especially maybe like a year ago was starting to, you know, hear Martin and Paul go back and forth on the Aftershock books.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Paul was obviously kind of in his regular job as like an instigator, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The hater.
Yeah. Talking crap, you know, like it's all in good fun. We know he's got to be the counterpoint to Martin. So, yeah. But, you know, hearing from Martin and hearing from, you know, the rest of the Nerdy Legion guys, you know, I got curious. And honestly, I probably would have been in a lot sooner. But I was, you know, waiting on Comixology sales, you know?
Right. Yeah. 'Cause you're all digital, right?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, the only exception is stuff that you can't get in digital, you know, like pre-order bundbundles or, you know, stuff that's not available digitally. It's out there even for new books, but if I can buy it digitally, that's what I'm going to do for sure. And Aftershock prices their books a little bit high on Comixology, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they don't ever discount after, you know, a month or two. Like, they're always full price. And even the sales prices are not the cheapest. So,
right.
You know, it took a while to really dig in. Cool. But I just finished this last sale for Black Friday. I pretty much bought up everything that I didn't have. Almost across the board, every title, at least that was available in sale.
Right.
And plowed through it. And, you know, it's been definitely, you know, I'm on board now.
Yeah. What was the first title that you dove into?
I think the first title was probably Animosity.
Okay.
Like, off the first sale, I took Martin's recommendations, and I bought up a few issues, a piece of Animosity, Black Eyed Kids, and Alters, and then maybe one issue a piece of kind of a lot of the other stuff that was out there.
Right.
Just to kind of sample it. So I probably started with Animosity and then Black Eyed Kids, and, you know, Alters, and Animosity and Alters definitely are still up, you know, among my favorites. Okay. But I think I'm a little bit more drawn to some of the sci-fi titles.
All right.
So I think my favorite, kind of the ones that stand out, having read through most of the stuff that's available, is like Shipwreck and World Reader and Replica.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I thought those were all great. And also, oh, Strayer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of sad. That one seems to have gotten canceled.
Yeah. Yeah. We bug Justin Jordan about it all the time. Every time we see him at a con, and he was like, just spread the word so that way there's more demand for it to come back, and I'll be happy to come back to it.
Yeah, well, you know, he's doing a new book, right? So maybe if that takes off, builds interest for Strayer, you know, you can get some momentum there.
Yep.
God, I feel like there's something else. Oh, obviously, Baby Teeth is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I sometimes I wish some of the series were a little bit longer, and maybe that is like some of these things we, you know, we'll get additional miniseries or something in the future.
Right.
But it's been enjoyable.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of the cool thing is like sometimes it's, you know, six and done, or with Rough Riders, for example, it takes like seasons, you know, where you get a mini and then it's a little break where the trade comes out and then you get the next season of it and then, you know, a little break with the trade. And then now, I guess technically season three of Rough Riders Ride or Die will come out at the first of the year, so.
Yeah, Rough Riders is great too. Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah, and the normals. That one. The normals. Are you into that one?
I really jumped on it like after the first issue. I thought the first issue like finished so strong that I was really interested, but I kind of almost felt like the ending's not an ending, you know? Like, you know, it doesn't feel complete.
Right.
So I you know, that's, you got to factor that in, you know, if it continues, I'd be on board for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And also we, like this week we got a breaking announcement that, they're doing an anthology, the first anthology collection that's featuring different artists and writers. That sounds pretty damn amazing. And it's going to be oversized European album format. It's called Shock, obviously. But so I don't know if you got it or not, but like on local comic book shop day, they had Animosity the Rise hardcover.
Oh, yeah, I you know me, dude. I'm all digital.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, yeah, so am I. But I got that and Secret Weapons from Valiant.
Oh, nice.
Because it's the hardcover and the trade hadn't even came out yet, so I had to jump on it. But the cool thing that I liked about it, and if it's the European album format, it's a hardcover, but the cover's printed on the actual cover. So you don't have the sleeve that you,
nice.
Have to, that you have to worry about and worry about keeping nice and pristine, you know, or whatever while you read it. So, and there's,
oh, dude, you just take the sleeve off when you're reading the hardcover. Take the sleeve off, put it somewhere else. Like you're good to go. I guess it depends on how long you're reading the hardcover.
Well, yeah, but it never fails. Like I have four teenagers, so, and then, you know, two cats. So like if I don't hide it after I take it off and put it up, then, you know, a soda might get spilled on it or the cat might jump on it and tear it or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks if something gets damaged, but like, you know, so few things actually have like long-standing value. Like, you know, it's like whatever. It's a bummer, but it's you can get over it.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere, so it's not like I would resell it or anything. You know what I mean? So, if it has a little nick on the corner or the little corner got ripped of the sleeve, it's not really end of world type stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, on the flip side, it could turn into like the Valiant hardcovers, like Collecting Valiant guys talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. That is
if
true.
They really underproduce and it gets super popular.
Yeah.
But dude, I did see the story about the anthology and I do think it's pretty cool. You know, like I have a soft spot for instance, like heavy metal and 2000 AD, you know, and like, that's the format there.
Yeah.
You know, same concept.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you could argue like certain, it would take a lot of the more sci-fi leanings of Aftershock plus like a lot of the more like explicit, you know, attributes of Aftershock, it could be like a great heavy metal, you know, with a actually high quality, satisfying version of that.
Yep. And you got Paul Jenkins and Phil Hester and Neil Gaiman on it. And of course, you know, Marguerite and Colin Bunn in them. Oh man.
Donnie Cates too, right?
Donnie does not have one in this one.
Oh, all right.
But the cool thing is you got Jim Starlin is doing something in this book.
Yeah, dude.
And you know, Brian Azzarello, which he's been at Aftershock before because he's doing American Monster. But, I mean, you got some people that's already been here, like Colin Bunn and Marguerite, obviously, and Phil Hester. But then you got other people like Neil Gaiman and who else? And Starlin, you know, and Bill Willingham that haven't. And then this is their story. This is whatever the hell they wanted to do. This is their 8-page tale. And it's just, you know, that's one thing that I like about Aftershock is, like, you know, I guess opposed to like Image, as to where if the creative team wants to do it, then they're just like, okay, go do it. Right. If it sells, it sells. If not, then, well, you got to tell the story that you wanted to tell. It might not have been as long as you wanted to tell it, but you know, because everybody that I've talked to has said that has wrote or drew for them says the same thing. And, you know, that's, to me, that's cool. That's like freelancing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, it's, I think that's, I assume that's the whole appeal, you know, and that's how they can, you know, consistently get these like crazy top tier creators, you know. It's because they give them an opportunity to do this weird passion project that nobody else would spend money on, you know?
Yeah. And Zach and I just got done talking about is like, it's almost like the Marvel Cinematic Universe phases, as to where, you know, at first when Aftershock first came out, we had the big top tier artists and writers doing stuff. And then we had the middle of the run tier and stuff. Well, now you got Zach and a couple other newer writers that are busting out, and they're like, here, you know what? You got crazy ideas, you got great stories in your head, here you go. Go do it now. So now we're getting the phase three, if you will, the young guns coming in and gonna blaze trails for them also.
I like it, dude.
Go for it.
Just like, you know, hopefully some of those, you know, pick up and helps bump their profile, you know, like brings it back to Aftershock.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Speaking of, we have 3 books to go over.
Do you want good Lord, dude. What a it's a big week.
Yeah, because, you know, you're on the VCR where you review the Valiant books, and sometimes there's 1 or 2, right? Maybe on a heavy week there's 3?
Yeah, sometimes there's 3. Not so much recently because they cut their kind of monthly number, you know, line down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of 3-book weeks. Luckily, this one was a 1-book week.
Right. And, yeah.
You know, it was definitely, I thought, a very solid issue. But yeah, left me a little bit of room to really dig into these ones.
Yeah. Well, which book would you like to start at? How about that? I'll let the newbie pick.
Newbie, all right. You want to go, you know, newest first? Does that make sense?
You pick which one you want to start with, and we'll go from there.
All right, let's do that. Okay. Let's start it out with Monstro Mechanica.
All right. And the writer is Paul Allure, and the artist is Chris Evenhaus. and the colorist, I'm going to butcher the heck out of this name, is Jan Weijers? How about that? Did I just butcher the crap out of that?
I'm sure you'll get corrected.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. And Paul Allure on the letter. And nutshell review, if you will.
All right. So I would say in general, right? You've got the Papal States and Florence, two Italian city-states that, you know, are essentially seem to be stacked as, you know, rivals, you know, in some stage of warfare between them. Leonardo da Vinci is designing weapons for the Florence, and the Pope tries to kidnap him to, you know, get basically the same services. So that gets foiled. Basically talks to the Medicis, who run Florence, and they kind of recruit him to design more weapons because they're engaging in an assault on a town called Volterra. And so he agrees to do that. Meanwhile, he kind of offers his services to the Pope through back channels to do the same thing. And amidst all of that, you have a robot running around, and he's got an apprentice who's taking care of the robot. Yeah. That's a nutshell.
Yeah, that's a nutshell.
That's kind of a lengthy nutshell. I apologize.
No, you're good, man.
But there's, yeah. Okay, so you want to start with talking about the robot?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm kind of wondering what they really don't allude to at all in the issue is why Leonardo built the robot, like for what purpose? Because, you know, it's clear one of the things that stands out is he doesn't want to humanize the robot. He doesn't want to, his edict, among other things, is to wipe his memory after every excursion, which incidentally is not dissimilar from a character called Flacco in War Mother. So, you know, kind of similar concept, I thought. But, you know, I think there's a question about what he built this robot for specifically, if not just kind of to be his, like, personal security when he's out and about.
Yeah. I thought he kind of did it for his own ego. Like, to say that he could, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's keeping it secret, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess that debunks that theory, because he doesn't really want it out in the open, and he can't show it off.
Well, it's premature, I guess, but I would think maybe he's keeping it secret so that he can use it without people expecting it when it's useful, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Leonardo is an interesting character, mm-hmm. because, you know, towards the end of the issue, Isabel, the apprentice, she's saying to the robot, I believe, basically, like, dude is the most dangerous person on Earth.
Yep.
And basically, I am, you know, leaving you, setting you up to either protect him or defeat him. So dangling that out, I have to believe that his aim in, I hope that it pays off in that he's kind of dangling services to both the Medicis and the Pope. I feel like he's gaming for, like, something big in this Volterra situation, you know?
Right, yeah. Because he even said, you know, you didn't have to try to kidnap me. All you had to do was hire me, because I'm not above that. I wouldn't have took offense to, well, I don't know, outsourcing, I guess, and working and switching sides for more money instead of, you know, now I take offense for you to, that you tried to kidnap me, which failed miserably. But have you ever seen Da Vinci's Demons? It's a TV show on Netflix or a TV series.
No, I don't think so.
Because it's kind of, this reminds me a lot of that. I mean, obviously, because it has Da Vinci in it. But in that show, he's like a detective, and he's using his inventions to solve cases, kind of.
Yeah.
And here, you know, he's using his paintings and, or not his paintings yet, but his inventions to make money, basically, to, you know, like they, like he's the Tony Stark, right? He's like,
yeah.
And because one of them asked him, well, what are you going to do if there's peacetime? And he's like, well, I paint.
Interesting. So do you think, is it possible he's playing both sides? Because, like, basically he's just always going to, you know, sell arms to the highest bidder, and it's good for business to escalate the arms race?
See, yeah, and I think that's what Isabel alludes to when she says that he walks that fine line between saving the world and ruining the world. And I think that's the part of the ruin the world that she's talking about.
Interesting. I can get behind that.
And it's awesome to me, like, that everybody in this is actual, like, historically real life people.
Yes. And on that note, do you think that Machiavelli will come back and kind of have a larger role?
I do. Yeah, I really do. I don't know what kind of role, but I see him coming back and having a bigger role for sure.
Yeah, I figure it's too, you know, because, like, I don't know. I'm generally of the thought that you put something specific into the story, like it's there for a purpose.
Yeah, yeah, and not thrown away.
Yeah, that's juicy, dude.
Yeah. Well,
So, like, were you interested at all, just as kind of a final thought, about the relationship between what's her name, Isabel and Leonardo? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he really drives home more than once that he's like, no, you're my apprentice and not my partner. And, like, I feel like he's trying to keep her in the dark about things. You know, he's like, no, go away. You know, like, you need to not be here while I'm doing this stuff. And I wonder if that's, like, he's trying to protect her, or, you know, or he's, you know, just like, I can't. He's just trying to stay obscure. You know, I don't know.
See, and, like, because part of me wants to say he doesn't see her as an equal because she's a woman. But then on the other hand, he, like, had that big argument with her about the robot being an it and not a he. And then if she thought it was just a he because it was tall and stronger and can wipe out people, and it couldn't be a she, then Isabel herself wasn't the apprentice that he was looking for. So that those two, like, things, like, conflict each other on my opinion about it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's like, I was wondering, you know, how she came to be his apprentice in this time that clearly is not a great time for female apprentices.
And especially female apprentices that, well, quote unquote, dress like boys, but the only difference is she's just wearing slacks. She's not wearing a dress, right? I mean, she doesn't have short hair. It's just put up. So obviously she's not dressing like a boy in 2017 standards. But back then it would be considered dressing like a boy.
Yeah. And that certainly seems to be a trigger for her, you know?
Yeah.
Throughout the book. Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out if that was the whole reason why she took off when she had the apple in hand. And she's like, oh, screw you, dude. I'm taking this apple.
Right.
Because you called me a boy. I was going to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, that was a different stand than the brother and sister stand that she went to.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Which reminds me of the brother and sister stand. Like, I'm a big 80s cartoon kid. So the brother totally looked like Prince Adam from He-Man to me.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. But that's sidetrack though. But yeah.
Well, no, I love He-Man, so I'm with you.
Yeah. Overall, so 1 to 5. What are you gonna? This is the first issue, so are you in, or what do you think?
Oh, I'm in, dude. Like, there's a lot here, and I enjoy how it's written. You know, like they don't belabor all the exposition that gets you up to speed for this quasi historical story, and they set up, you know, a lot of intrigue, you know, but they give you enough to like speculate. So I'd probably go like 4.75 out of 5.
I'm about there with you. I'm gonna give it a solid 4, and it's not, I mean, I'd probably go higher, but it's first issue, right? And I love it because these are like realistic characters. I mean, well, they're real characters, but they're not real characters put in a totally different role, as in, like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and Rough Riders style. But yeah, everything here, there's so much complexity that I'm in. So yeah, that was that. What about?
So how many stars? What are you doing? 4.75? Or
no, I'm gonna do
5.
I'm gonna do a solid 4. I'm gonna do a solid 4. Yeah, because I mean, it wasn't like that first issue blow it out of the water for me, so I can't really give it a 5 because I want to see it, you know, gut punch me. But you know, the art's awesome in it, I thought. It was realistic type art, and you could tell that the robot was made of wood and in spots, and then kind of like tin in other spots. So I like that twist also, or that take on it.
Yeah, the robot is interesting, and I mean, kind of the titular character, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I think that as the story goes on, one would assume that he's gonna become more and more important.
Yeah. Well, especially since she's not resetting him like she's supposed to.
Yeah, but couldn't Leonardo do that at any time? He's like, okay, fine, I'm doing it because like that thing with, you know, that happened yesterday was weird, so
yeah, well,
and does that not then like kind of succeed in the objective? Or is it like Westworld where they retain something even though they shouldn't, you know, like
right.
A ghost of memory.
Right. And by resetting them, how would she even reset it? You know what I mean? Is it like a watch where you wind it up? And you know, she's not winding it all the way back to where it can't be wound anymore, or
that's a good question. I mean, I assume he's still like hasn't been shut down or whatever, even though they took the crank out.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
If they reset him in that scene, then it kind of, I don't know, it muddies what they're trying to say is happening, you know?
Right, right.
So maybe it's like she's got to sneak the lever at a later date to keep him winded and,
yeah,
and it's like not reset.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. So
what's up next?
Let's do Brilliant Trash number 2 next.
Cool.
I was trying. Dang it. I got to edit this out because I lost the creator roll call on it. I closed it out instead of a different closeout.
Yeah, I can't even find the PDF, dude.
You can't?
Nah, I'm not seeing it unless it's like super late.
Because Martin said he sent it to you also, right?
Oh no! I mean, I just can't. I don't see the where they credit the creator.
Oh, yeah. I was going to the actual website to do it because
word. Yeah, it's not an issue. So
yeah, the writer on Brilliant Trash number 2 is Tim Seeley, and artist by Priscilla Petraitz, and the colorist is Marco Lesko. And I don't see the letter. Oh, the letter is Marshall Dillon. Like normal on most Aftershock books.
Nice.
So, issue number 2 recap.
Okay, so I feel like I may just want to recap my understanding of, like, one into two, you know, like,
yeah,
because I've read both and I don't know where one stops and the other begins.
Yep.
But okay, so my general take on what's happening, right, is Dr. Zen created some kind of technology that gives people superpowers. And she wants to share that with the world. She wants everybody to be able to choose to have these powers to help the world. And I think built into that, the choice is that it's going to kill you sooner rather than later. So that's your choice as for, like, do I actually want these powers? Seems like she developed that in tandem with at least personnel from the Lifespan Corporation who want to keep they have the technology and they want to keep it to themselves for military application and keep it secret. And on the other hand, you have their competitor, St. Damien Medical. And they want the technology, assumedly, just to make as much money as they can. They're going to put it on the open market, I would assume.
Right.
So there's your general dynamics, but where is interest, you know, like, I'm curious how direct the connection is between Lady Last Word and Dr. Zen, because they kind of, I mean, clearly Lady Last Word has the technology, and she also seems to want the world to see the light.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's possible there might be a connection there. And beyond that, you know, these kind of like weird powered people that we see, they call themselves the God Hackers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any direct connection between them and like the real players. Like, they're kind of like JV squad, and they idolize Lady Last Word. They like saw her thing and they're like, we're going to jump on that. We're going to get powers too. And they're not working right. But I don't think that they're really organized.
Right. They're like the rebels that aren't picking either side, basically.
I mean, they've got like pictures of Lady Lastword up and they quote her and stuff. Like, I think that they want to be like doing what, like if she had a call to action, like they were answering the call. Mm-hmm. But, you know, clearly their kind of technology was not cutting it. Right. Although I don't know, like, I feel like everybody's power kind of works except for like muscly dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little Mouse.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, like clearly they're using reporter lady. Basically, like they're gonna cut the substance out of her. That's their kind of main goal, and or to just like get Dr. Zen's memories and download them. But you know, like they're not trying, even pretending that they're trying to help reporter lady.
Yeah, I was. See, I was confused about that too, because I just since they saved her in the first issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of figured that they would try to help her, but then, like after seeing her, and then like, oh nope, you need a programmer, and you know she, what's her name, Alamalia, right? Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, the animal empath. You know, she rolled out those knives like she was going to cut it out of her. And I was just like, wait, what's going on here? I thought, you know, I was like, come on. And then, of course, you know, the hitman guy. Or not the hitman, but.
Yeah, dude, he's got the same powers as, you know, assumedly like Lady Lastword and all that, you know?
Right.
Like, they kind of make a direct comparison, but I feel like he's actually gives off like an honorable warrior vibe, who's
yeah.
just like basically at the mercy of very dishonorable bosses.
Yep.
So I think if it, like they're setting up, he could flip at some point.
Oh yeah. Because especially like what his boss does to the little girl, right?
Oh, dude, yeah.
Because, you know, she sees and tells him to answer, but for her to use the power, she grows older by the second. And, yeah.
Yeah, that's brutal, dude. And he's done it twice now,
twice
right?
Twice now, yeah.
And basically he's just like, I'm murdering children right now, you know?
Yeah. And you're right, like, in the God Hackers thing, there's like all kinds of pictures of her, so they idolize her for sure. Because I'm just now noticing it and looking back on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it's a little bit nebulous what specifically Lady Lastword wanted to happen.
Right.
And kind of how close her ties are with anybody in particular.
Right.
You know, her and Dr. Zen could be completely, like, unrelated and, you know, but, you know, we shall see, you know, like, on some level, what's Dr. Zen trying to do, right?
Right.
She's just trying to tell the world, you know?
Yeah.
And she was going for a legit reporter who... you know, could really do the story justice, and that didn't work out, so she had to go for some lady who was a total hack.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Just wrote lists for BuzzFeed Analog.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, BuzzFeed. but, okay, dude, that's also an environment where basically a lot of the story is about how traditional media has completely failed us. And people are in their bubbles and they don't watch the news.
Yeah.
But maybe total hack social media-esque reporter could break through to that audience in a way that Legit Reporter could never do.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that. Because as you see, like, for the second issue in a row, we get, like, the, whatever it's called, the Kidder, or, which I'm assuming.
Kidder, yeah.
Which is, I'm assuming it's, like, Twitter / Yahoo News all in one. Or, like, Kidder and Facebook, maybe. Because there's a lot of stuff in there, too, that, you know, that part, you know, it's like you see different stuff. And you even see, like, little clickbait bots on that part, right? Like, it's Peggy Lovelace, and it's click here for my pics, and hornyfreepic.com, and blah, 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 blah. Because, you know, people are like, oh, Lovelace, so we're going to pick it and go from there. So there's a lot of this element of this book and this concept that I'm totally digging. And then there's some of it that I'm, like, totally lost on as well.
What are you lost on?
Well, I guess not, like, lost. It's just, like, not driving home for me. Like, I don't know if lost is the right word, but, like the group. Why is the group even there, right? The God Hackers. What's their main role? Because, like you said, you know, there's only two major players. So why do they even care if the hacker reporter lady has it or not?
Well, I mean, if they are basically, like, trying to take up the torch from Lady Lastword, mm-hmm. I think that makes sense. And maybe that is kind of the same torch as Lady or Dr. Zen, which is just, like, everybody should be able to have these powers because they could do something good with it. You know, well, that's an interesting idea because, you know, like, you give people powers, not everybody's going to do good stuff.
Right.
But I think they're just trying to fix themselves so they can do that, right? Arguably, maybe.
So they're going to go against what they believe to do that? Because they're trying to take her powers from her, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
You see what I'm saying? Like, so if they're trying to let everybody have powers or whatever, then why would they try to take her powers away just because she's a quote unquote scumbag clickbait reporter and she doesn't need powers because she'll do bad stuff with it? Like, are they trying to be proactive about it, or like she doesn't deserve it? But like, you know, that goes against the whole thing that they idolize though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could probably agree that they don't necessarily specify what their greater objectives are.
Right, yeah.
Besides just like, yo, I want sweet powers, dude.
Yeah.
If that was all, I don't think that they would be like quoting Lady Lastword and all that, you know? I think there's some connection there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it begs the question, are we going to see these characters again, you know?
Right.
Like, what's her name? Reporter lady. She's whisked away.
Yeah.
So these guys got to them find them now, track them down. I would assume they're going straight to Lifespan in Anaheim, you know?
Right.
So that's that's kind of a tough situation.
Yeah. And then we see that the other corporation has the doctor's body at the end in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy. Because, I mean, does she drink the blood or does she eat the finger?
See, I was actually looking at that, right? Because I've been reading some Chew recently.
Okay.
And that's like a famous, I feel, image from Chew.
Right.
And it looks like a finger. But it also looked like she's digging into his abdomen. The chest. Yeah. The chest cap. Yeah. So like, it could just be a an organ or something. Yeah. But I mean, I'm interested. It seems like it was only for the purpose of a DNA test to confirm her identity.
Right.
And I guess you could assume they didn't get from that what they would need to have all the technology, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. I think they still need to somehow get it out of, you know, Kennedy. That's the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a showdown there, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. Any last thoughts?
I think I feel pretty good, actually.
Okay.
So this one, I think I'm going to go 5 out of 5, actually.
Really? Digging the heck out of it, huh?
I mean, clearly there's a lot, dude. And I like the way it's written again, you know? They're not spelling everything out. But there's definitely a lot of clues scattered around. So
yeah,
I'm thinking it.
Yeah. See, I think I'm gonna go straight four again, and I totally enjoyed this issue more so than the first issue. Like the first issue, it seemed like there was so much going on that it was hard to figure out what my main focus was supposed to be on. And I think Martin was along that line too, but I don't remember. That was a couple episodes ago. But this one was more cohesive, and even though we don't know, I mean, obviously, Lifespan Inc. is more than likely the bad people of it, but you know, the St. Damien MedTech doesn't look very good either, right?
Yeah, most likely.
So it's basically two giant bad corporations going head to head to see who's gonna get this tech.
Yeah, and that could be why, you know, Zen wants the world to have it, you know?
Right. Right.
It's like you guys are both gonna ruin the world. You're gonna hurt the world with what you do with this, so it should just be for everybody.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, I'm going four, and like I said, I totally enjoyed issue two more than one, but it made one make more sense, I read this issue, and then I went back and read issue one, and then this issue again, and, you know, it's more cohesive now for me.
Yeah, and that's a good way to write as well, you know?
Yeah.
Like... You don't want to give everything away in the first issue.
Right. Right. All right. So for our last book, we have Animosity, number 11, with Marguerite Bennett and Raphael Del Latour. And we got friend of the show, Rob Swaggy P. Swagger, doing the colors, and Marshall Dillon doing the letters. You want me to do the nutshell review of this one, or you want to take this one too?
Hey, be my guest if you got one, man.
It pretty much leaves off where issue 10 did, and we understand kind of where the humans are coming from on this little colony, about why they wanted the insects. Or not the insects, but the bees. And they're actually their mindset towards them. And we see that through Mittens. Like, they're just insects. They're not cats or dogs or farm animals, mammals, basically. Because they're just tools to them. As to where Sadie totally doesn't agree. And... they bust in and find Sadie in the barn, and they have an ultimatum, I guess. like Mittens is trying to talk to Sadie and say, like, I can still vouch for you and you can still stay here. But Sadie still has her doubts because she asks where the women are and where the kids are. And what's his name? Kyle? Is that right?
Yeah.
Kyle.
Yeah, also it's Jesse, by the way.
Jesse?
Not Sadie.
Oh, Sadie's baby teeth. Yep, you're right. Yes. So, yes, Kyle sees it Mittens and the community's way as to where there's no point of, you know, sacrificing. You could sacrifice bees to make honey, basically, instead of, you know, pick your battles. And Jesse's like, no, everybody, if you can think and you can talk, then you have a choice to live. And one of the bees escaped to go find Sandor and Potter. And at the end, when it's coming, who lit the fuse? I'm trying to see. Was it Potter?
It's the lemur.
Yeah.
The one with thumbs.
Yeah. Yeah. So they light the fuse, and then it blows up the gasoline supply. And so who was the other guy? The guy that they had captured.
I assume that he was, I mean, he's just a resident of the farm.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they showed him in the last issue.
Okay. And so,
but yeah, they kind of leave him behind, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so Kyle and Jesse and Mittens hop in the tractor and she kept trying to make like a bee, right, Kyle? Like she kept trying to make that, but like, is that like make like a tree and leave? Was that the reference she was going with?
That's what it seems like, but I can't think of what the actual
I couldn't think
like,
of what
joke would be.
Yeah, right. Like,
what do bees do? You know, they buzz.
Right. Like, okay. Yeah.
And then, that doesn't. I don't know.
Make like a bee and buzz out of here, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes bees get the F out of here, but
yeah. But and. It's kind of crazy because now they're getting out of there, or they're breaking out of the barn, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They're making off, dude.
Yeah. So Sandor and Potter and the rescue team are still... We don't know. They're still... Because they just lit the gasoline storage unit or shed. And blew that up, so we don't know exactly their location. We can assume that they're okay, right?
Yeah, well, part of, I think, lighting a fuse like that, I would think, is that by the time the fuse goes off, they're no longer there. They're somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Sandor seems like he's pretty smart. I think he could do enough to get away, or at least in a position to get away. Yeah. Once he knew that Jesse was safe.
Yeah.
I would assume.
Yeah.
Okay, but, like, what's next, right? Like, I think it seems like they signal, basically, they're just taking the bees right back where they came from. They're going to pick up the hostages that the bees on the outside have taken, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if those... If where they're headed right now is where the bees started from before they were stolen, would not the farmers like go right there, like know exactly where to go to try and catch up with them?
Below the bridge or the dam, right? Isn't that where they kept stealing them from?
I think so, yeah. The reservoir, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's what they did. Like, you think somehow they've kind of blocked off the farmers by the explosion?
No, because I think the explosion was right in the middle of the commune or the farm part, right? So
yeah.
So that was just like a diversion so they can get out of there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
right there with you. I mean, like, if you're going to take those bees back to the reservoir where they started, then, yeah, the farmer's going to come back and they're going to be more pissed off now because you just...
Yeah, no, the bees have got to go into, like bee relocation program. And
yeah, yeah.
Like, find another place to live because that... If you lost your bees and you got nowhere to start, like, that's the one place you would think to look, I think. Right. So,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, I forget where they left their companions before they went to the camp.
They're on top of the ridge, right?
Well, you know, I mean, like, the Bess and whatever, the, like, the their friends. Oh,
yeah.
Bees somehow are keeping hostage. I forget what the situation was there.
Yeah.
But that's why they're doing this, right?
Yeah.
And kind of on that note, right? Mittens is ostensibly a hostage right now, right? Like, Jesse called her a hostage.
Yeah.
So she's taking Mittens, who is her friend. That's kind of messed up. I don't think Mittens wanted to leave.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because Mittens' philosophy is the same as the farmer's, basically. Right? Because Mittens' philosophy is, you know, there's 100 animals on this farm, and you just want to split hair over insects. Right? Because they're not the wall. Which apparently bad stuff happens at the wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing stuff to get by. The animals work together, which we saw in the last episode that the animals really are not, they're working, but they're not happy about it. Right? We had the German Shepherd or whatever it was last issue bitching about having to clean the pigsty or something. So, the humans are basically, like, saying that everybody's working together for everything, but, like, there's hardly any food, or they're trying to make it that way, but, like the resident guy says, is, like, you know, you're trying to make it go back to the way it was, and that's not possible. And Jesse's like in every post-apocalyptic type story is like, you can't lose sight of your morals before just because, you know, shit hit the fan basically, because then what would happen? Everybody would be quote unquote animals, I would think, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, dude, like, that's the whole thing. Like, Jesse here is, like, she's young enough that I think she can roll with, like, how crazy of a situation the wake is. And now there's no difference between people and animals.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, clearly, I mean, it seems like some humans are understandably not down with that, you know, like groups in power tend to resist giving that up. Yeah, it's definitely interesting, as far as kind of the labor question, you know, like that I think is one of the central things, you know, and like nobody likes forced labor, you know, especially in a communal environment where your only incentive is mutual survival, you right. know, like right. some people and, you know, that's what you get on the flip side in, evolution, right?
Right.
Is like, that's exactly the thing is like, you don't work, you don't eat. And there's something to that. And I think that also they do have, a food store with like a massive orchard there, but they, you know, it does depend on the bees. Mm-hmm. Now, question there is like, what would the bees be doing if they weren't doing this? You know, like some animals more than others, I think you could argue it's like, they're really just acting in their nature. The only thing you've done is relocate them to a different place. So they're not in their home, but they're still doing what bees do.
Right.
And right. like they're surviving.
Right.
You know, like the harvest is a side effect.
Right.
Of what they would otherwise be doing. And it's like, okay, yeah, you know, should they have the right to refuse to do that? That's arguable, I guess. But how exactly are they forcing the bees to do that? You know,
right?
I think you could argue the bees are just like, well, damn it, we're here now, but I guess we're going to do what bees do.
Right. Yeah. And see, I think that's what Jesse's big hang-up is, you know, and that was like the overall narrative of the story that Mittens was telling, like when she was little and in the schoolyard and took care of the bullies type thing, was as Jesse saw it, as the bees didn't have a choice whether they wanted to actually be at the farm or not, instead of, you know, going there and getting kidnapped and then relocated to the farm. That's how I saw it. So they were like,
maybe they should just relocate to the farm. If they move the farm, it's win-win, right?
Well, I mean,
it'll take a while for the trees to yield fruit, I guess.
Right. But, like, I think, I guess the way, I don't know, I mean, I can see both sides, basically, right? And that's what makes this book, or this particular issue, pretty amazing. Is like, I can see Jesse's side is, like, if the farmers came up, not in hazmat suits, not with flamethrowers, and, like, threatening them, and saying, hey, we have this farm where you'll be safe because it's guarded and blah, 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 blah. Do you guys want to do that? Instead of going there with their hazmat suits on or their beekeeper suits, whatever, and the flamethrowers and being like, no, you're going with us or we're going to, you know, kill 20,000 of you. That just because they were small bees, you know, small insects, they still had the choice to either go or not. But then, you know, on the other side, I see your point and, you know, Mitten's point of where it doesn't matter if you're at the reservoir or if you're at the farm, it's your nature, you're going to do it whether you're there or here. So it's like that constant moral struggle, right?
Yeah, and I mean, like, they're kind of a weird example, right? Because, like, a lot of the other animals that are being made to work, not necessarily doing what they would typically do. Like, your example of what was maybe, you know, a house pet, a dog, like, now a dog's gotta, like, you find something for the dog to do, and he does that every day. You know, this is a dog who probably sat around.
Right.
Maybe not if he's on a farm, but for argument's sake, there's going to be some animals that weren't working animals that now have to eat, have to go work. So I think that, you know, that is a different scenario than really the bees, more than any animal, arguably, are just doing what they would, what would be in their nature.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's not necessarily in a nature for a horse to pull a plow.
Right.
You know, like various other kind of like working animals, how they work, but bees, just let them go.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, and that brings up the question, like everybody has an assignment or a job to do on the farm. What's Mitten's assignment?
Sweet talking the new, arrivals.
Yeah. It seems that way.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this, dude. I thought one of the interesting things in this issue was Kyle, right?
Uh-huh.
Because basically they say, like, Kyle was the one who raised the alarm. If it weren't for Kyle, they would have made a clean getaway mm-hmm. without issue, right?
Yeah.
So why would he do that? And my, you know, my thought is, I feel like in the previous issue, he was arguing that they should stay. Like, he wants to stay, and maybe he thinks, like, oh, if we get caught trying to escape or whatever, like, maybe they'll let us stay. We don't have to move on and like, miss out on this good thing.
Right.
What do you think?
But what would be his motivation for busting her out, then?
Does Kyle do that?
Yeah.
I mean, Sandor does, right?
Well, he's driving.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So, but to your point, though, I think, like, you know, Kyle's having, like, at first, he's like, yeah, this is too good to be true. We're not going anywhere, so I'm gonna set off the alarms, and everything will be okay. But then, when he's in the interrogation room, you can see him, like, he's crying or whatever, because I think he's regretting his decision of betraying his friends, or at least Jesse, because he doesn't know about. Well, he knows that Sandor and them are out there. But then, like, the guy comes in, you know, with a Rambo knife and basically interrogating them and telling them how it's going to be. And I think that changes his beliefs, basically, or his mind, rather, of, like, we don't have to function as a farm. It's not right. So, like, he's more on Jesse's... Like, in the beginning of the story, when he set off the alarm, he was, like, on Mittens and the farm side of the philosophy, but the more the farmer in the interrogation room kept talking, then he realized that he was more on Jesse's side way of thinking. And then I think that's why he bust her out, and, you know, we're back to being best friends. But the question is now, though, is he going to pony up and tell Jesse and Sandor, and then when they meet up again, that he set off the alarm?
Yeah, we may find that out pretty soon.
Right.
Yeah, I can buy that, dude. That's, yeah, like, he saw what they were really about, and he's like, I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was also interested that he has multiple passports with maybe different identities.
Yeah.
Like, have they explored his backstory at all?
Not that I remember, no. And see, and that was the kind of thing, is like, where he's always, that was another reason why I thought he was like the farm, was like, he conned his way into this good place. You know, it's like one of those typical stories of, you know, it's the con man who does all the wrong stuff until you meet this one person or this one group of friends that changes your whole thing, and you don't like being a con man anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I saw it, is where, you know, he was looking out for number one, you know, and then by setting off the alarm, he was more worried about himself. And then the more as the issue went along, then he was having that regret and seeing that that place wasn't what he thought it was, and that he was actually more loyal to them, to Jesse and Sandor's group, than what he thought. He's starting to have a conscience, basically.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's acted, I feel, pretty morally as long as we've known him in this series.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, seeing, you know, multiple passports for different nationalities, like, that reads more to me like intelligence or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, more so than, like, Like, I feel like con man, I've never met a con man, but I feel like a lot of them, maybe they got a driver's license at best or something, you know, they don't necessarily need to provide identification, or maybe they do,
I'm with you, because now I'm wondering, since you brought that up, maybe he's part of the reason why the wake happened.
That's a crazy theory right there, dude.
You know, like, he has multiple passports, so maybe he's working for the government or whoever, you know, made the wake happen. So he had to have different aliases and identities. So, and the farm would have been a great place to hide out and not ever get found again, right?
Yeah.
So he could just hide away because, you know, it's secluded and covered in the walls, so you're not going to see anybody of your past.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, dude, I just thought, though, about the walled city.
Yeah.
Like, how creepy is the walled city, man?
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a bad place, and given the amount they're talking about it, I bet they get there at some point.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, clearly animals can't go in.
Yeah.
So that may be something where Jesse gets abducted or something, because that's where all the women go.
Yeah.
And Kyle's got to break in and bust her out, and the animals are, like, just spectators.
Yeah. And Sandor can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So what about this crazy theory? How about this? So Kyle lets them know, not exactly everything, like, that he had something to do with the wake, but that he betrayed them and set off the alarm. And Jesse gets mad and runs away from the camp. And while she's away from the camp, the scouts from the wall capture her. And then that's how we get to our next arc of Kyle has to go save her to redeem himself to the group.
Yeah, I buy that, dude. And I also think that's very Walking Dead, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the Walking Dead analogy is always floating around with a series like this. Mm-hmm. It's something where you're like, okay, captive in a hostile, you know, compound, we got to bust them out. Like, I feel like I've read that in Walking Dead before.
Right. Like, the wall city is like Terminus style.
Or yeah.
Or like where the saviors, I guess.
Yeah, or like the governor or something, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. You want to rate this one up?
Yeah, I'll go 4 out of 5 on this one.
All right.
Pretty good, but, like, you know, not necessarily like tons of bombshells, you know?
Right, yeah. Dude, I'm going to give it my usual 4.5 out of 5, really. Because there's, like, always that complex debate, like, every issue. It's not just what's happening on the surface, but, like, the overall story. Like, this one, you would say, would be bullying, right? And, like, dude, I'm just, like, this is, like, one of my favorite books, so, of Aftershock. And I feel like I say that every time we do a review. But, you know, since issue 1, I've been all in this world and the characters in this world, whether they be human or animal. So, yeah, 4.5 out of 5 for me, for sure.
Word, dude. I'm with you, man. I love the characters.
Yeah. Well, you want to wrap this buddy up?
Yeah, let's do it, buddy.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. And Travis will be back like normal. And Martin missed out like normal. This is like the fourth interview that we've had on this show, and he's missed out, except for the one, the very first one with Joe. So what does that tell you, Travis?
Oof. No comment.
No. You can find Martin on Twitter at Geekvine. I'm at Rombar316. Travis, you're at The Great Magnet. Is that right?
Yeah.
And you're also regular or not? You're on VCR too, right?
Yeah, dude. Valiant Comics Review over at onlythevaliant.com, I believe.
Yep. And you can find us collectively at Aftershock Central, or Aftershock Pod. And thanks for listening.